This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Greetings, my friends, patriots, lovers of democracy, truth, and justice, believers in peace, freedom, and the American way. Tom Hartman here with you. Why am I hot in my own ear? There we go. And there's a lot in the news. First of all, it's International Women's Day, and a fascinating piece over at the Huffington Post pointing out that women right now have fewer rights under our Constitution than do gun owners. Seriously. Gun owners have their very own amendment to the Constitution. Ever since 1982, every year, Ted Kennedy used to do it every year, introduce into the Senate a constitutional amendment that simply says you shall not discriminate on the basis of sex, or what we would today probably you'd say gender. But, you know, or, you know, however it should be constructed, actually, in this, you know, non-cis world as we've, you know, moved and progressed. But in any case, the Equal Rights Amendment has never been passed. The Republicans have always successfully blocked it in either the House or the Senate, depending on where they had the most power. And Democrats have been pushing for this forever. So gun owners have more rights than women. It's bizarre. But, you know, that's America. There are only three countries in the world that guarantee a constitutional right to the ownership of guns. Only one of them is a developed country, the United States. There are 131 countries in the world, including every other developed country in the world, that guarantees equal rights to women, including Cuba. When we were down there, they've you know, ever since the 60s, absolute equal pay, equal rights. And in fact, one of the remarkable things that we saw was, you know, about a little over half the college faculty, the students going to the colleges, the people there were women. I mean, it was just extraordinary. Anyhow, Robert Mueller, I wanted to, there's a bunch of news stuff that I want to talk about. I wanted to mention that. And by the way, if you're participating in any of the women's marches around the country or any of the women's events, please call us in. Call into the program, 202-808-9925. Call into the program and let us know what you're up to, what you're doing, you know, what kind of energy you're getting, what you're, you know, feeling, sensing, whatever. And, you know, I'd like to get some reports if you have any. I want to get into how right-to-work laws and Citizens United are killing democracy. But first, just because it's at the top of the news, what this whole Seychelles Island meeting with Eric Prince and with this guy Nader, and who was apparently representing the Crown Prince of the United Arab Emirates, or the Crown Prince of Abu Dhabi, who facilitated the meeting, and a Russian oligarch, Kirill Dmitriev, the director of the Russian Direct Investment Fund. Now, what were these guys up to? And there's a great piece over at wonkette.com titled, Robert Mueller's New Cooperating Witness Might Just Blow Trump's Russian Conspiracy Wide Open. I have been saying essentially forever that I think that this has more to do with Trump's, with money, with Trump's business interests, than with any noble idea that Trump has that the United States should have a good relationship with Russia, or any ignoble idea that Trump might have that he would like to be a traitor to his own country. I think that this has to do with his desperately wanting to have a business relationship in Russia, and already having a number of business relationships with Russian oligarchs for whom he has in all probability laundered money. And that what we're seeing right now, and this is just my prediction, and the evidence I think is accumulating that I'm going to be proven right on this, but you know, this is just one man's opinion, is that what we are looking at here is a conspiracy, a criminal conspiracy of oligarchs. The head of the United Arab Emirates, the head of Saudi Arabia, perhaps oligarchs associated with Israel, we're not sure, but there's this kind of binding that's happening between Saudi Arabia and Israel, and Russian oligarchs, and of course American oligarchs, Donald Trump and his rich buddies, but particularly Donald Trump. And all these oligarchs, I mean, they're sitting on hundreds of billions of dollars and probably trillions of dollars. How do they move it around? How do they facilitate it? How do they hide it? What do they do with it? If the Trump crime family and the Russian oligarchs and the Middle Eastern oligarchs and whatever other oligarchs there are, I mean, we've got this infestation of billionaires all over the world. who increasingly are becoming right-wing billionaires in order to suppress democracy, suppress the press, to consolidate business, to suppress small businesses, to suppress the power of labor. If that thing gets broken up because of George Nader's testimony and all this other stuff that is coming to the fore, if Eric Prince's role in this, the brother of Betsy DeVos, by the way, and the founder of Blackwater, gets blown up in all this, I think that might be a really, really, really healthy thing for American democracy. And frankly, even for Russia and for every other country in the world, if we can expose the crime, if Robert Mueller is going to end up exposing the crimes of the oligarchs, this is much more consequential than did Bill Clinton get a BJ in the White House. It's much more consequential. Well, yeah, I would say it's much more consequential than did Richard Nixon order a break-in at the Democratic National Headquarters and try to cover it up. This is, I mean, that was just good old-fashioned politics. That was just Richard Nixon wanting to make sure that in 72 he got reelected. You know, trying to hide, trying to bury his own dirt because he was afraid that the Democrats had it and it might come out before the election. So there's that. And then the other thing that I wanted to mention that I think this is a really important issue. Democrats have been saying ever since 1947 when Harry Truman vetoed the Taft-Hartley Act, which established so-called right to work. It's actually right to work for less, which established that individual states could withdraw essentially from the national, withdraw on behalf of their workers from the protections of the National Labor Relations Act, and that their workers could continue to get the benefits of being in a union shop without having to pay their union dues. And what has happened is that the Republicans, starting with an organized war on organized labor by Ronald Reagan, when Reagan came into office in 81, about a third of America was unionized, which meant about two-thirds of American workers had essentially the protections of unions, because union jobs, whenever there was a high density of union participation in any city in America or any region in America, that set the floor for other jobs in the private sector. So you had about two-thirds of America enjoying the benefits of union jobs. Now it's, you know, 6% of the private workforce. And so finally these guys, James Figenbaum, Alexander Herzl Fernandez, and Vanessa Williamson, writing in today's New York Times, right-to-work laws have devastated unions and Democrats, they point out. And they point out, Grover Norquist predicted this, as you know, as he was championing, hey, let's destroy the unions. And they have finally quantified this. They said, when right-to-work laws are in place, Democrats up and down the ballot do worse. In presidential elections, these laws cost Democratic candidates 2 to 5% points in right-to-work counties. Voter turnout drops by an additional 2 points. Now, when you consider that Hillary Clinton lost Michigan and Wisconsin by less than 1 percentage point each, and either one of those two states would have thrown the election to her in the Electoral College. I mean, obviously, she won 3 million more votes than Trump did nationally, but still. Right to work, Wisconsin was a new right to work state, and I believe Michigan just became. This is not a small thing. This is part of the Republican strategy to destroy blue-collar workers, to destroy the middle class, and most importantly, to destroy the Democratic Party. Now, when you combine that with the actions of the Republicans on the Supreme Court, from the Buckley case to the Citizens United case, to empower right-wing billionaires and corporations to own their very own politicians and to bribe politicians and call it lobbying and campaign contributions, when you combine those two things, the latter benefiting the Republican Party, the former, you know, the right to work for less laws, devastating the Democratic Party, what you have is the answer to why Republicans have even held any power since Reagan. This is something that the Democratic Party really needs to focus on. We'll be right back.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Also on our program today, Dr. Richard Wolff is going to drop by in our second hour. America's lawyer, Mike Papantonio, will be with us in our third hour. Stick around. And welcome back. Let's see here. Tony in Los Angeles. Hey, Tony. Thanks for watching
Hi,
us on our website.
You?
What's up?
Yeah, I was calling to let you know that I'm launching a new website for women of color.
Okay.
To come together, because that really is a majority, and we've never each group has their own respective organizations, I think coming together as mm-hmm. one will be even more powerful, especially in these days and time. But also I wanted to get your opinion about Tamika Mallory that has come under fire. You know, she worked on the Women's March in D.C. for last year, and now she's coming under fire saying that she's supporting Farrakhan and she needs to denounce him and all this kind of stuff.
Yeah. So, I'm not that familiar with her story. I'm going to have to dig into that a little bit.
Okay. But I appreciate it.
Yeah, with regard to your new website for women of color, do you have a URL? Would you like to share that with us? A website?
Oh, sure. It's called BetweenSisters.org.
Okay, BetweenSisters.org.
Yes, and that's what I'm looking for us to come together. But in regards to Tamika, before I go,
sure.
I think...
Educate me, please.
Women have to look at how many people that have been against us, and I'm still a supporter of Farrakhan. We have to look at his entire history and what he's done for black people as a leader. And people have taken so much of his wording and stuff out of context. And whether he is or isn't, black people decide who their leaders are. And no one, I don't think they're in the moral position to tell this girl that when they used her to help organize the march, didn't they know what her history was before?
Well,
but it was okay.
And the white media over the years has turned, not even over the years. I mean, at the time of when he was alive, I remember, they had turned Louis Farrakhan into a cartoon character, basically, into a cartoon bad guy.
Right.
You know, the scary black man bad guy.
I'm sorry?
I said the scary black man bad guy, you know, is
exactly.
How the white media was portraying him. He wants to have his own, you know, nation of Islam that's only black people, and they're going to, you know, ultimately rape all the white women and kill all the white guys. Or, you know, I mean, that was the implied subtext that you know, white people across America were getting out of the media, in my opinion. Your thoughts, Tony?
It's true. But if you listen to his words and go, the one main one they always try to say is that he said Hitler was a great man. He said, no, what he said was, if I can raise my people out of the ashes like Hitler did, then he was a great man, but he was a wicked, evil man.
Yep.
They never put that part on it.
Yep. Yeah.
You know what I mean? So I suggest everybody needs to go and listen for themselves before they judge this man. And it doesn't matter to me because he's going to be a leader for me regardless. I don't care what the majority.
Well, there was a new book out last year. I think we did it as a book report. I could be wrong on that, but a new biography of Louis Farrakhan. That's I think a much more balanced look at his life and you know what he and the Nation of Islam were up to, still are. I'll have to look around for it. I'm sorry, I don't remember the title, but I remember thinking, oh, this looks good. Anyhow, Tony,
yep.
we're hitting a break.
Thank
so
you.
I got a boogie. Once again, your website?
It's BetweenSisters.org.
BetweenSisters.org. Thank you very much.
Correct.
I'm going to check it
Thank
out.
Thank you.
Thanks a lot, Tony.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Mm-hmm.
We'll be right back. Welcome back. Tony just called us and told us about a new website she has launched or is participating in launching for black women or women of color. It is titled BetweenSisters.org. And I'm looking at the webpage right now. It looks cool. So just a heads up on that. And looks like a fascinating thing. Yesterday in Minnesota, and my apologies for not having caught this story as it flew by. We're on the air in a pretty large station in Minnesota, KTNF. In fact, I will be there this weekend for the Blue State Ball on Saturday. I'll be in Minneapolis. And Sunday morning, we've got a little breakfast with people, and you can get all the information on KTNF's website, which you can easily track down on the internet. I'm flying out right after I get off the air on Friday, and really looking forward to that trip. But in Minnesota, hundreds of Minnesota students stage walkouts and protest demanding action on gun control. This at least 1,000 students from the Minneapolis and St. Paul metro area descended on the Minnesota State Capitol Wednesday. This by Luke Barnes over at Think Progress. To call for gun control reforms, the walkout and protest had originally been planned by students at St. Paul Central High School, but snowballed after students from surrounding schools heard about it on social media and decided to join in. This is happening all over the country. The kids are just saying, no, you guys, you don't need assault weapons. You don't need semi-automatic weapons. You don't need weapons of war. You don't need 50-clip magazines. You don't need this stuff. And we shouldn't have it on the streets of America. You don't have it on the streets of other rational countries. You shouldn't have it on the streets of America. It's really just that simple. And our young people in this country, God bless them, they are waking up and saying enough. On the other side, you know, some of the old people, like in Tennessee, this is totally bizarre. Glenn Casada is the House Majority Leader for the State House of Tennessee. And he just basically killed a piece of legislation after he got a phone call from a former state senator, a guy by the name of David Fowler, asking him to kill the legislation or to refer it to summer study, which is where bills go to die. A piece about this by Morgan Gestaltler over at thehill.com. This legislation would ban child marriage. In 2016, last year for which we have statistics, 42 men and 166 women under the age of 18 were married in Tennessee. The nonprofit group Unchained at Last said it has found at least 3 marriages in Tennessee involving a child as young as 10 years old. Yes, 10-year-olds are getting married in Tennessee, according to this group Unchained at Last. And legislation was proposed by Democratic Representative Darren Jarrigan, co-sponsor of the bill, said, let's end the child marriages in Tennessee. And the Republicans are saying, no, you're not going to do that. You're not going to do that. Brilliant. International Women's Day 2018, there are protests literally all across the world. There's some corporate sponsorship. Mattel is sponsoring. And everybody's going to jump on the bandwagon here, trying to promote this. The new report: women in prison are in worse health than men. Frances Perrodin. This is all over at theguardian.com, by the way. They've compiled a whole series of really fascinating stories about the state of life for women around the world. More than 50 countries have organized Wikipedia edit-a-thons. UN women have been tweeting about the global Wiki Gap event, organized in partnership with the Swedish Foreign Ministry. The idea is to get more women contributing to the website to address the gender imbalance in the world's largest online user-generated encyclopedia. That's fascinating. She writes, the New York Times is doing something pretty cool. It's using International Women's Day to launch Overlooked, a project to write the obituaries of people who never received them. 15 women today. Historically, the obituaries in the New York Times have been white men. I mean, it's just, that's the nature of it. That's the nature of the end point of 7,000 years of patriarchy and hierarchy in our culture and societies. But then they've got pictures of, protest meetings in Kosovo, in Milan, Italy, in Nairobi, Kenya, in Ankara, Turkey, in Kiev. Kiev, Russia, or I guess that's Kiev, Ukraine. It's the capital of Ukraine. There's a women's strike in Jarlswood Detention Center. This is going on. This would be in the UK, I believe. Syrian female doctor challenging the patriarchy even in war. This powerful and inspiring video featuring Dr. Amani Belour, who is committed to challenging gender stereotypes in war-torn East Ghouta. France marks International Women's Day. This is by Kim Wilshire. President Emmanuel Macron visiting the Paris-based property business on Thursday morning, declaring exemplary in matters of professional equality between women and men. So what are you doing on International Women's Day on the one hand? On the other hand, one day, we get 364 days where the men are in charge and one day to celebrate women. It becomes embarrassingly gratuitous. We need actually to pass the Equal Rights Amendment. Let's do something.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 202-808-9925.
In fact, today would be a fine day to call your legislators at 202-225-3121 and say, hey, it's International Women's Day. How about passing the Equal Rights Amendment? Welcome back. It's the Tom Hartman Program. And taking back the mainstream media 3 hours a day, 5 days a week with talk media for the sane among us. Those left. Yeah, there's a lot of us left. In fact, the majority of America is sane. This is the thing that makes me so crazy, is when I hear people, particularly in the morning shows on MSNBC, you know, Stephanie Ruhle and these other folks talking about, the far left, you got to worry about the far left. The Democratic Party, if the far left takes over, there's going to be a big problem. Look at the polls, right? This is a poll that was conducted in 2016, by GBA Strategies on behalf of the Progressive Change Institute. Is a serious, solid poll by a reputable polling company. These are positions that Stephanie Ruhle and many of the others on MSNBC, and I have great admiration for her as a reporter and as a former financial person. I mean, she's great, but she's wrong on this. You know, talking about the far left in the Democratic Party. These are your far left positions and how much support they have in the United States, which would indicate that they're actually centrist positions, not far left positions. Do you want to allow the government to negotiate drug prices? 79% of Americans say yes. Should students get the same low interest rates as big banks? In other words, student loans at 1% or 2% instead of 7 or 9%. 78% of Americans say yes. Should we have universal free pre-kindergarten? 77% of Americans say yes. Should we have fair trade that protects workers, the environment, and jobs rather than the so-called free trade? 75% of Americans say yes. This is of all parties, right? Should we end tax loopholes that for corporations that ship jobs overseas? By the way, those loopholes were just expanded with the Republican tax scam. Should we end those loopholes? 74% of Americans say yes. Should we end gerrymandering? 73% of Americans say yes. Should we allow Medicare for all? Single-payer health care in the United States. Now, again, the morning shows on MSNBC would characterize that as an extreme left position. 71% of Americans say yes. By the way, every other developed country in the world has already done this. It's not rocket science. Should we disclose corporate spending on politics and lobbying? Transparency. 71% of Americans say yes. Should the NSA be required to get warrants before they spy on us? 71% say yes. Should we spend $400 billion a year, a modest sum, on infrastructure projects? Right? I mean, this is Bernie Sanders. 71% of Americans say yes. Should we have debt-free college at all public universities? 71% of Americans say yes. Stephanie and others, this is not the far left. This is the center of America. Should we expand Social Security benefits? 70% of Americans say yes. Should we have a full employment act? Should the government be the employer of last resort, as Franklin Roosevelt was the last president to do with the WPA and the CCC when capitalism fails, like it did in 2008, and millions of people are thrown out of work, 700,000 people a month for month after month for a year? Should the government step in and say, if you can't find a job, we will create a job for you? 70% of Americans say yes. Should we retrain coal miners and oil workers for clean energy jobs? In other words, should we be promoting clean energy, wind, solar? 70% of Americans say yes. Should we end tax deductions for fines that Wall Street bankers pay when they rip us off? Did you know that they can deduct that, the fines that they pay? 70% of Americans say yes, of course. This is just common sense. These are all, should we have transparency in trade negotiations? 66% of Americans say yes. Should tipped workers get the full minimum wage? 64% of Americans say yes. Should we eliminate the Electoral College? 65% of Americans say yes. Should community college be free nationwide? 63% of Americans say yes. Should all corporate political spending be required to be approved by shareholders? 66% of Americans say yes. Should you require a special prosecutor in every case that a police officer kills someone? 61% of Americans say yes. Should we guarantee net neutrality? Now, keep in mind, this was 2 years ago this study was done. The support for net neutrality has gone up since then, because back then most people didn't even know what it was. 61% of Americans say, yes, guarantee net neutrality. These are not far left positions. This is the center of America. Should we tax the rich at the 50% rate that Ronald Reagan first took taxes to after he dropped them from 74%? Should we tax the rich at the 50% rate? 59% of Americans say, yes, tax the rich. This is not the far left. Should we have a minimum guaranteed income? 59% of Americans say, yes. Should we break up the big banks? 58% of Americans say, yes. Should there be public matching funds for small dollar donations? 58% of Americans say, yes. Should we break up the big banks? 55% say, yes. Should we tax the rich? This was a broader, simply tax the rich, millionaires and billionaires. 54% say yes. Should there be a financial transactions tax to fund many of these things? 50% of Americans say yes. And it goes on from there. This is not the far left. I'm sorry. This is America. We are being so badly served by our media. And frankly, I think it's that, you know, when you reach that level in the media, you know, you're basically hanging out with people. You become a millionaire. You hang out with millionaires, what do you see on the morning shows on MSNBC? With great frequency, Republicans, and the Democrats that you see typically are the corporate Democrats. You very rarely see actual progressives, even though they're nearly a majority in the Democratic Party, and progressive policies are supported by a majority of Americans, virtually without exception. Please name one progressive policy that more than half of Americans don't support. I can't think of any. Anyhow, let's pick up some phone calls here. Linda in Mossy Rock, Washington. Hey, Linda, what's up?
Hi there.
Hey.
I was calling about International Women's Day, and I was thinking about how sad it is that not 100% of the women in America can support this cause.
Or the Equal Rights Amendment.
Yes.
I mean, you've got Republican, 53% of white women in America voted for Donald Trump. You've got Republican women supporting politicians who do not support the Equal Rights Amendment. That seems to me like, see foot, shoot gun, or whatever the matter. They're shooting themselves in the foot.
It makes me sad, and I just want this nightmare to end.
Yeah. Well, I think the good news, Linda, is that change is coming. The bad news, of course, is that the forces of what Franklin Roosevelt referred to as the economic royalists, the forces of corporate power and greed, have been given free rein by the U.S. Supreme Court, by Republican appointees on the U.S. Supreme Court, and we're all looking at these electoral maps and saying, hey, maybe the Democrats can win. The Koch brothers have not yet started to pour that $400 million into the elections that they promised. And that's just the Koch brothers and their network.
We have to end the money.
Yeah, yeah. That's the fundamental cancer at the core of our democracy, and it was put there by the U.S. Supreme Court in 1976, and it needs to be taken out by citizen action and a constitutional amendment, particularly now that we've got arguably the most right-wing extremist Supreme Court that we've had since the 1920s, with Neil Gorsuch on the court, one of the most extreme right-wingers that Donald Trump could have ever found. Linda, excellent point. Thank you for the call. Well said. Reza, is it Reza or Reza in Hot Springs National
Park? Tom.
Reza. Reza in Hot Springs National Park, Arkansas. What's up?
I just wanted, if you don't mind, pardon me. I was talking about some times ago you mentioned that Koch brothers have the largest database of voters in their...
They own a company that does, although I think that the company that Robert Mercer owned, Cambridge Analytica, may challenge that. But a few weeks ago, there was a news story about how the Koch brothers and Mercer, Cambridge Analytica, and I forget the name of the company, Quant or something, whatever it is, that the Koch brothers own, that they were actually going to be working together to support Republicans in this election.
Okay. I go back to the part that Mr. Mueller is trying to find out if there were some help given to Russia to manipulate our previous election. They should look at that database that you mentioned, Mercer and Koch brothers and other companies work.
Yeah, they didn't need Russia. They had all that information, and then Facebook basically did the work for them. Facebook has, you know, a mind-boggling amount of information. So if you want to direct it to people who have liked things that seem Republican, whether it's gun control or homophobic websites or whatever, you know, Facebook will sell you that information, and that was what was used by the Republicans in the last election. Yeah, the Russians might have bought $160,000 worth of ads. The Republicans are buying millions of dollars worth of ads and placing millions of people on there and controlling tens of thousands or possibly hundreds of thousands of bots. Yes, the Republicans should not meddle in the Russians should not meddle in our elections. The Israelis should not meddle in our elections. So you had your AIPAC meeting yesterday. Huge meddling in our elections by other countries. This should not be happening. I agree with that. But that said, the major meddling in our elections that has had political consequences that you can clearly see and document and that common sense indicates is our biggest problem are those being done by a small group of hardcore right-wing, largely libertarian billionaires.
Tom, could I also mention something about the Lebanese Hariri when he went to Saudi Arabia?
Yeah, for people who don't know what you're talking about, the president or prime minister of Lebanon, who has dual Saudi citizenship, went to Saudi Arabia, got arrested, and resigned. I'm sorry, I didn't realize the break was coming.
At the same time, if you remember, they got all the millionaires hung in there in Collarstone. Yeah. And do you know what was the reason for having those people captured or put in prison?
Yeah.
Basically because Saudi Arabia wanted to get money from those people to fight their war.
You're right, and they did.
You're
thanks,
Reza. Listening to Tom Hartman. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
We'll be back with more of your calls and the news of the day right after this. And welcome back. Karen watching Free Speech on DirecTV in Sandstone, Minnesota. Hey, Karen, what's up?
Hi, Tom. I was thinking the other day, you know, topic was a while ago about keeping Guantanamo open.
Mm-hmm.
Most of us don't want that place open. Well, maybe we should keep it open for all these traitors and conspirators and these white supremacist child murderers. Let's ship them off to there to spend the rest of their lives away from the United States.
Yeah, at an emotional level, I'm like, yeah, but, you know, practically speaking, we really need to return to the rule of law in this country.
We do.
And I realize you're saying that tongue-in-cheek, but it's something really needs to be done about Guantanamo because it is humiliating. There's no way that the United States can support international organizations like the United Nations and say that we support the rule of law, say that we support human rights, and have people in Guantanamo who are cleared for release, you know, cleared of any crimes whatsoever. They got sold to us by neighbors who didn't like them or simply wanted the $5,000 bounty. Back 15 years ago in Afghanistan, they were, you know, they committed no crime whatsoever, and they're still in Guantanamo, even though the George W. Bush administration cleared them for release, and you know, Obama got a few of them out of there. But the Republicans blocked him at every turn, and now, of course, Donald Trump wants to keep them all down there. Probably many of those people have just, like, gone totally off the bend mentally. You'll remember Jose Padilla. They literally turned him into a piece of furniture, is how his lawyer described him. He was so badly tortured by the Bush administration, waterboarded, solitary confinement, everything else, that he became mute and, you know, unresponsive. He just turned.
He just sits
silently all the time. They destroyed his mind.
Yeah, that's.
Horrible. This is our country. This is America.
Yeah. No, it shouldn't be, and it can't be. I think. I hope we're changing with this new blue wave.
Yeah, I do too. I have big hopes for it. Karen, thanks for the call. Well said, Joseph in Essex, Maryland. Hey, Joseph, what's up?
Hi, Tom Hartman. I was wanting to know what you think about what was going on in the Arctic right now with the melting ice, and do you think it's likely that we'll see an ice-free Arctic by the summertime?
I think it's likely, and it scares the hell out of me. And what is going on in the Arctic, the big immediate, we can see it right now right in front of us problem of what's going on in the Arctic, since it's warming six times faster than the tropics are, and about three times faster than we are here in the mid-latitudes. is that with the loss of that ice and the raising of the temperatures in the Arctic, the temperature differential between the Arctic vortex, the Arctic dome of air that circulates around, and the flow of prevailing winds, you know, across North America and Europe and, you know, in Russia and, you know, China and around the Northern Hemisphere, basically. The difference in temperature between those two used to be substantial, and that difference in temperature is what created the jet stream and kept it fairly rigid and maintained stable weather. And now that that differential in temperature has been diminishing, the strength of the jet stream is weakening, which means that this polar air is literally just sliding off the North Pole from time to time and covering the east coast of the United States or parts of Europe. And meanwhile, warm air from Asia is going up over the Arctic and accelerating the heating. So now it's in a positive feedback loop, which is also known as a death spiral. I mean, I'm very concerned about it. We've got a documentary coming out about this in a few months. I'll keep you up to date on that. But it's a big deal, Joseph. It's a big deal. Thanks for the call. We'll be back. Welcome back. Troy in Brooklyn, New York. Hey, Troy, what's on your mind today?
Hey, how are you doing, Tom?
Troy, I cannot hear you. I don't know what's going on with your phone.
Oh, I'm sorry. Can you hear me now?
Yeah.
Yeah, I know you mentioned earlier about Michigan being one of the right to work states. I'm trying to figure out I believe that should be a high density union. What is causing these states that are high density union to flip over to the right to work? Is that a vote that's done by the majority of public?
No, it's Republicans. When Republicans take over a state, they pass these laws, whether people want them or not. I mean, you know, and then in Wisconsin, they even extended them to public employees, you know, with the exception of cops and firefighters, because the governor's afraid of them. But the Republicans have been trying to destroy unions ever since they were essentially legalized in 1930, I think it was five, with the Wagner Act, also known as the National Labor Relations Act, which forbade companies from, you know, destroying unions, forbade police departments from killing union members as they used to do, and said that you actually have the right to unionize. This allowed states to individually take away that right to unionize, and now you've got about half the states, a little more than half the states in the United States, have flipped to become so-called right to work for less states.
So then it's on the people of the state to then join together if they want and vote out the people that are putting those...
Yes, although union busting is now a $2 to $3 billion a year industry. There's this huge industry of consultants and lawyers and movies and whatnot, and they come in. When I worked for Clear Channel, I was doing a morning show here in Portland, Oregon, on KPOJ, and we were unionized at the time with AFTR, the American Federation of Television Radio Actors, and the company wanted to decertify the union. They held an election, and we lost, or at least those of us in favor of the union lost. I think it was part of it was because one of their stations was a big right wing station, and so there was a bunch of right wingers working there. But whatever. I mean, that's how it happens. They just go workplace to workplace. They work with the management. These consultants. They come in and they have training seminars for the employees. Now, they didn't do that at KPOJ, but in big employees. They threaten employees. It's an industry, Troy. And
I've been on strike for 12 months now, so I know exactly what some of the stuff you just mentioned is some of the stuff they started doing over here.
Yeah. It is, and they're doing it. The Republicans are supporting it because, of course they support billionaires and big business, but also because they know that unions are one of the ways that workers can not only band together to challenge the power of big business and billionaires, but also they can be a political force. Unions historically have gotten out the vote. And when you flip a state to right to work for less, then what you see is a 3 to 5% drop in Democratic votes and about a 2% vote a drop in votes overall. So it's hitting the Democratic votes, really, really hard, and arguably helping the Republicans. And this is, the Democratic Party needs to make this a priority. They should have been screaming bloody murder starting in 1981. And instead what happened is we got the Democratic Leadership Council, and now we've got the Third Way. where they're saying, well, you know, we don't need the unions, we don't need the blue collar vote. You know, that's all so 1950s. Really what we need is the top 10% of Americans. We need the white collar vote, and we need the clean corporations. We need the banks and the technology companies. We need Amazon to support us, and we need money from Google. And as a result, you've got corporate Democrats who are, you know, in a position that is not particularly useful for the United States. You have 17 of them voting to deregulate the big banks, for example, day before yesterday,
right,
or voting to move forward on a debate. Hopefully they will see the light of day. That's what's going on. And it's going on all over the country. Troy, I got to move along, but thank you for the call. Mary in Albuquerque, New Mexico. Hey, Mary, what's up?
Hi, it's Marie,
I'm sorry.
Yeah, thanks for taking my call, and thanks for saying that about left-wing opinions, because I feel like I'm 68, but people keep telling me I'm so left-wing, and I'm proud of it. You know, I don't care. I want to care for
And it's
people.
Not left-wing. I mean, Bernie Sanders, and not to always go back to Bernie, but, you know, or Elizabeth Warren or Mark Pocan or any of these guys, the positions that Bernie ran for president on, 100% of them, with the exception of net neutrality, which didn't exist in the 1930s, 100% of them were simply the positions of Franklin Roosevelt. And many of them were nowhere near as radical as Roosevelt.
I know, he should have called it the New Deal instead of socialism. I think it had gone farther.
Yeah, yeah.
But I want to...
Go ahead.
Oh, go ahead.
Well, I was going
to
say...
I wanted to ask your opinion on my... I tell everybody that asks my opinion, and all my congressmen, everybody, Donald won by election fraud.
Yes.
That's Citizens United, voter ID, gerrymandering, cross-checking. Hillary only lost by 80,000 points in those 3 to 4 states she needed to win.
Right.
Why don't Democrats investigate this?
God only knows. Greg Palast is. I mean, you can read it. You can watch his movie over at Amazon, The Best Money, The Best Democracy Money Can Buy.
I give Palast 10 a month, and I bought his films, and I try to say, do you want to watch this? And nobody wants to watch it. So,
yeah.
I feel like I don't have money. You know, I'm a retired nurse. I'm a veteran, but I don't have a lot of money, so it's very hard to get your voice out.
Yeah. Well, the thing to do, Marie, is to find local progressive politicians and do everything you can to support them. And it doesn't require necessarily money. It can be phone banking. It can be, you know, showing up with a sign. It can be calling your friends. It can be posting on social media.
Yeah, I'm doing all that, and I helped our mayor Keller get elected.
Great.
You know, not help him, but yeah. I mean, I just
Marie,
was part of that
I'm
campaign.
Sorry, I'm hitting a break. I've got to run, but thanks for listening to 1350 AM in Albuquerque. I appreciate the call. We'll be right back.
You're listening to Tom Hartman.